Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. My name is Gavin Ward, and I'm the host of Pop Health Podcast. And today I am in the state capital of Sacramento with two folks that may be familiar to some of our listeners. We have Yvonne Leonard with us today, as well as Macaulay Fuse-Aarons with us today. These folks lead the Community Care Licensing Division, the Home Care Services Bureau, and just really grateful for you to spend some time today. Good morning, ladies.
Morning, Gavin.
Good morning.
Good morning. So one thing I'd like to share with the audience before we get into it this morning is guests like Yvonne and Macaulay have helped Pop Health Podcast be nominated and receive or basically become a finalist for the National Podcast Awards in the healthcare category. So just want to thank you again, Yvonne and Macaulay. Guests like you and CMS and Stanford and other folks have just been so generous with their time. So thank you very much.
Well, that's really exciting, Gavin, and congratulations. That's a wonderful opportunity. I'm really excited for you guys.
Yeah, and it's because of guests like you and Yvonne spending the time. So thank you so much. Now, we last saw you about 3 months ago, and last I heard, things were pretty crazy, working long hours, getting implementation in place. Have you had some time to take a break or any vacation, anything lined up maybe this year?
So we've had some time. We take some Saturdays and Sundays off, and this Monday, we went ahead and authorized Monday as a day off.
Yay!
And I don't believe we're having people working Saturday and Sunday, but they did work last weekend. We're hoping to be able to allow the management team and staff time off later September, October.
Okay, excellent. How about you, Macaulay?
It's still busy. We're still working our tails off, and we still have an amazing dedicated team. So not a whole lot of vacation.
Yep.
Hopefully, again, as a kind of Yvonne mentioned, in the fall, hoping to take some time with family and kind of do something unwork-related maybe.
Yeah.
Disneyland, you go down south. Who knows?
Very good. I was just at Disneyland for my daughter's third birthday, and while you may have heard of surge pricing, not sure if you've heard of that at Disneyland, they do have surge pricing, so you may want to look at getting a value day there.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. Yeah, I think we may go with my four-year-old nephew who's never been before. So.
Okay.
It'll be exciting, but yeah, the surge pricing, not something I'm excited about.
Well, good to see you again, ladies, and hope you get that enjoyable time off later this year. So tell us a little bit about statistics. I know that's something the audience likes to hear about. Please share statistics on implementation, organizations, aids, things like that.
Perfect. So these statistics are as of pretty much the beginning of the week, about Monday.
Okay.
We have received a little over 1,100 HCO applications.
Okay.
Some of those applications did have a letter of intent process towards the beginning of the year. Some of them are brand new organizations that have come in through the door these past 6 months as well.
Okay.
For HCA applications, there's the twofold process. There's the online registry as well as the manual applications.
Okay, and really quickly for the audience, HCA stands for Home Care Aid, both independent, which means they work directly
Correct.
With a consumer, and then affiliated, which is an agency.
Correct, and okay. We go between terms. You'll notice as we talk, the state's really big on acronyms. So
yep.
We go through HCA, we'll sometimes say that they're caregivers, aides, kind of all different types of. They all mean the same thing.
Sounds good. And just for the audience, HCO means home care organization, or basically a licensed home care agency.
Correct.
Okay, great.
So for the caregiver applications, the home care aid applications, we have received and processed over 10,000 manual applications.
Okay.
For the online applications, we have about 48,000 that have come in, applied, and paid online.
Great.
Right now, we have about 62,000 searchable home care aides on the registry. They're in a variety of statuses. So we have some cleared. I believe we have about 44,000 cleared home care aides. Those are ones that can be working. Everything's good to go. Then obviously, we have some pending. They could be pending for a variety of reasons, most likely due to they're going through the exemption or background check process.
Okay. And what does the exemption process mean, Macaulay?
So the law requires that you have to have no criminal history, or if you do have criminal history, you have to get an exemption by the department. So our partners, the Caregiver Background Check Bureau, is responsible for processing all those exemptions. They're doing a great job, but it can be a very lengthy process
Sure.
because there's there's proof of rehabilitation. There's different information that the applicant has to provide to them for them to be able to process that exemption request. So a lot of these home care aides are in the middle of that exemption process right now.
Okay. Thank you.
That's pretty much our numbers. Technical assistance, we're really big on technical assistance, and we want to help everyone through the application process, both on the home care aid side as well as the organization side. So we respond to anywhere between 400 to 500 calls a day.
Wow.
And that's been pretty consistent the past couple of months. We did have a peak in February, so I think we did about 10,000 calls in February, and we're now averaging about, I think, 8,800.
Okay.
So encourage people to call, ask questions. That's what we're here for, because it still is new. And we're still going through that process, and technical assistance is huge.
Very good. So you can accept calls from aides, families,
yes,
the general public, is
yes,
that correct?
All of the above.
Okay, very good. And what hours, whether it's a healthcare professional, caregiver, general public, what hours can they give you a call?
So we are open from 8 to 5 and no lunch, so we don't break. Call
us
whenever.
You don't eat lunch.
We don't. We stagger our lunches, but okay. 8 to 5, and then if they call before, during, after business hours, leave a message, and we'll give you a call back.
Okay, and then is there an email address they can reach out to
as
well?
Yes, there's a couple of different email addresses. Okay. So our main Home Care Services Bureau email box is HCSB, as in Home Care Services Bureau, at DSS, which is Department of Social Services, .ca.gov.
Yep.
Then for more of our registry specific questions, we get a lot of questions for people who are having difficulty applying on the registry or have questions about their status or things like that.
So these are for caregivers, trying to register with the state.
Yes. Okay. Or we get a lot of questions from organizations checking on status.
Yep. Okay.
You can also email, it's HCA, as in home care aid, as we went over before, registry at dss.ca.gov. So we manage both of those boxes. We have a few other ones, but those are our main ones.
Very good.
And just so everyone knows too, our telephone number, so you can give us a call, is 877-424-5778.
Okay, great. Thanks for that great information, Macaulay. You mentioned there's, around 60 plus thousand caregivers or aides that have been a part of the registration process. Can you tell us a little bit about how many of those are independent versus affiliated?
Yeah, we actually just pulled some statistics from our IT department, who's also been a huge, valuable player in this implementation, and only about 9% are independent aides.
Okay.
The rest of those home care aides are affiliated to organizations.
Okay.
So vast majority are affiliated and working for organizations.
Got it. If you mind me asking, I know there's a lot of independent caregivers out there in the community. Do you have any thoughts or maybe ideas of why there's not a higher percentage of independent aides applying?
We believe that on some situations it's because the independent aides may have a relationship with the individual that they're providing the care for, and so the aide, the caregiver does not choose to, and or the person receiving the services is not asking them to.
Okay, so would that be like a daughter taking care of a mother, for example?
Correct. It could be, or it could be that I've provided services as a caregiver to a family for the last 9 years.
Yeah.
And there's just no need to have that that
extra layer
requirement. Correct.
Got it. So they've built the trust that it's already built in. Maybe for a family that's looking for a new caregiver, it might be helpful for them to consider a registered home care aide because you have that strong background check.
Yes, exactly.
Very good. Thanks for clarifying there. So we talked before the podcast, Yvonne, you'd mentioned some successes that you've seen. So whether it's yourself, Yvonne, or Macaulay, we'd love to hear some success stories so far this year.
We have experienced a lot of successes in the Home Care Services Bureau and also in the department in implementing Assembly Bill 1217, the Home Care Services Consumer Protection Act.
Okay.
The ones I'm focusing is the Home Care Services Bureau, but we still feel one of our greatest successes is the engagement that we have with industry,
yeah,
the communication that we are having. Macaulay receives calls on a daily basis from home care organizations that they've established a relationship. Our analysts all have started relationships with their organizations that they will be assigned to.
Yeah.
So we believe our communication relationship with the stakeholders has been tremendous. We're very proud of that, and we appreciate everyone's willingness to work with us during that process.
To kind of jump on board too, as Yvonne mentioned, we really appreciate it, but it's been critical. We have learned so much from the industry to help change and maneuver through this implementation process that I don't think we would be here today if it wasn't for that communication, our monthly stakeholder engagements, and we've upped it now to where we do a conference call and the webinar. It just allows us to get a pulse point on what some of the hot issues are and some of the big concerns out there so we can try to address them as soon as possible.
Yeah, and like I mentioned the last time I saw a few months ago, even though you are an authority figure, your organization is an authority figure, really I feel you guys have been a friend to the industry, which is pretty neat, and having to balance authority versus wanting to support as well and feeling want that perception that you're here to support. I want to give a quick shout out to my friend Cameron Acromie with the American Board of Home Care. I know you gave him some time, mm-hmm. And I believe you guys are going to have a representative down at their meeting in Southern California.
We were just talking about that earlier today. Yeah, we will be down there.
Great. So he's a great friend of mine, and we're part of that organization. Just for the audience, some of you may know the American Board of Home Care. American Board of Home Care, known as the ABHC, is an organization that kind of self-governed and regulated the industry on their own prior to really more of a formal regulating authority here in Sacramento. So it's neat to see the collaboration between the two organizations. I know there's groups like CASA mm-hmm. as well that I'm sure you guys have spoken with and has been an ally, I would hope, mm-hmm. With you. So I'm a part of both those organizations. And again, thank you for being a friend to the industry and being supportive while maintaining that authority figure. It's been really neat to see. We talked about some successes. How about some challenges that you're comfortable sharing with the audience?
One of the biggest ones that we mentioned last time and is still a challenge today is not knowing the population size.
Yeah.
We're preparing for numbers that are guesses.
Okay.
So that is a challenge.
Yeah.
So far, we've been pretty accurate on what we believe was going to happen has actually happened. So,
great.
But that is a challenge. We're also, one of the challenges is identifying and delivering the most efficient outreach efforts to ensure that the greatest number of people have the knowledge of this law and the requirements and that know that we do exist and that we are here to provide technical assistance. We've got the outreach, but we want to make sure that it is the most efficient and effective outreach possible.
Very good. Well, historically, even with the podcast, we've kind of kept this to healthcare professionals, but we've actually heard some of the public has actually picked up on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So by you taking time out like this, you know, taking 30 minutes out of your day to get the word out, we were hoping is helpful. And hopefully, you know, this time next year, the general public is familiar with you guys.
Yes.
That'd be great. Why would a caregiver, we talked about this a couple minutes ago, you mentioned family perhaps being a long-term caregiver. Are there any other reasons that a like an independent caregiver would not sign up with Home Care Services Bureau or register? Any thoughts there?
I know I've heard some independents were waiting to let the department implement it to see what the benefits were going to be and pretty much allow us time to get the implementation process completed.
Yeah.
So that could be playing a factor. That's just our guess.
Okay. And just a reminder for the audience, for a caregiver, there's a registration fee of $25
correct.
To register. And I believe is that a biannual registration?
It is, biannual
okay.
registration fee.
So about $12.50 a year to be mm-hmm. registered. And then there's a one-time background check. Is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
That is correct.
And there's different fees depending on what part of California, but generally speaking, what's the range, would you say?
I think it's around $60
yeah.
for the check. And then again, like you were saying, depending on where you go in California for the rolling fee, it could be a little bit more, but I think the actual background check fee is about $60.
Okay. For the audience out there, just to confirm, figure $60, $70 for a caregiver to do a background check one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know agencies like the one I work for actually pick up that cost on behalf of the caregivers, and some agencies do that, or the caregiver may have to. And then there's about a $12.50 annual, it's biannual fee of $25, but it's about $12.50. So just want to make sure everyone's educated out there about that.
Yeah, if they allow their registration to lapse, they may have to reprint, which they would have to pay again. That life scan fee.
Okay, and when Yvonne mentioned reprint, basically they have to roll their fingers on a pad, and it's electronically transmitted to the California Department of Justice and Federal Bureau of Investigation checks. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. Okay. And just one thing else I want to mention with the benefits to fingerprinting. As Gavin mentioned, it is a lifetime fingerprint, unless, of course, as Yvonne mentioned, they let their registration lapse. However, the other good thing is those fingerprints can be transferred among other community care licensing programs.
Yeah.
So if a home care aide works in a residential care facility for the elderly, we can just simply transfer those fingerprints to the other organizations. So they don't have to reprint if they're going to different programs, which is a great benefit as well.
Absolutely. And I know we've emailed a little bit about that as well, and appreciate that easy process. That's cost effective. I mean, there's really no cost to it. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. There is clearance transfers, and then there's the exemption transfers, which both have a little bit of a different process. But clearance transfers, you pretty much request the transfer and they can start working immediately. Exemption process, the Caregiver Background Check Bureau does have to reevaluate just to make sure that everything's still good and that the job descriptions are similar or something like that. But yeah, no added cost, pretty seamless.
Great. Well, very happy to hear. I know previously that was a challenge for me in my career with the staff I worked with and just getting that transfer process in place. So thank you for that. Tell us a little bit about, we've talked about independent and affiliate aides. What are the differences and requirements for an independent aide versus an affiliated aide?
The biggest difference between the two is, first of all, independent aides are, it's voluntary. It is a voluntary process. So affiliated home care aides, when they're working for an organization, it is a requirement that they be registered. They also have TB requirements, and they also have training requirements, 5 hours entry level and then a 5 hour annual
training. And this is for the affiliated caregivers. Okay.
So that's the biggest difference. If you're going with affiliated home care aide, they have that extra, I wouldn't say protection necessarily, but it is a sense, an extra protection, that extra level of training and understanding that is a requirement for the affiliated.
Okay. Thanks, Macaulay. Now, we talked about companies that maybe have filed what's called the letter of intent, which means they haven't necessarily completed the full application. I believe that deadline originally, which was December 31st, 2015, was extended into, was it March 1st? Or what was the date that it was extended to? Do you recall?
The letters of intent, the intent to apply, did have to be submitted before January, I think December 31st.
Okay.
But what we did is we allowed the full applications to go to be submitted through March. So we allowed more time for gathering the fees, completing the application package and things like that for those organizations that did submit a letter of intent.
Okay, got it. Now, I know there are some organizations out there that kind of used to be more of a direct referral agency, and they realized that they probably wanted to switch over. Just with some of the community partners, they recognized, depending on the scenario, it might have been a misclassification, so they've adjusted their model to try to be a licensed home care organization. If they didn't meet that deadline, what happens from there? Is there a delay, or when? Can you tell us about that?
The statute does state that they have to be licensed by July 1st, 2016, in order to continue to provide home care services or arrange for home care services.
Okay.
However, the department is going to, we're extending as much flexibility as we can.
Yeah.
We're working with individuals. So if an organization has a situation, we do encourage them to call us and talk to us about that.
Okay.
We want to work with everyone. We want to make sure that the services that are needed to those individuals needing home care services, it's available for them.
Got it.
We do have to enforce the statute. However, we are trying to extend the flexibility where it's available.
Yeah.
And please call us and let us see what we can do.
Okay. So just to make sure I understand correctly, because we get these questions a lot with our community partners, if an organization is kind of working as a direct referral agency, I believe DRA is the abbreviation, and they maybe didn't quite hit the deadline, you're working with them to try to facilitate that process to get them to become an HCO, but there may be a little bit of a delay.
So let's be, the one thing that I do want to be clear about, right now, DRAs are exempt for licensure, so they do not have to go through the licensure process. In the specific instance where you were talking, where they kind of realize, you know what, this is not the business model we want to go, and we want to be more of an organization. Reach out to us, and we're kind of working through, again, technical assistance is our big push these first 6 months with the new law and the new requirements, and just the fact that not a lot of people know still.
Right.
So call us, work with us, and we'll try to work as diligently as we can to kind of get through the process. realizing that we do have this July date that's very fast approaching.
Yeah, it makes sense. So I guess for me, to tell our community partners is those organizations, those agencies, direct referral agencies, can still operate as a DRA after July 1st. Mm-hmm. They just won't, they'll still be considered DRA, but to be considered licensed, that will come a little bit later.
Yes.
As, okay, good to know. We get that question a lot out in the community. So let's see here. So CMS is a group that's been actually part of this podcast and historically has not really funded in-home care directly besides Medi-Cal in-home support services. Do you see or have there been any discussions with groups like CMS or maybe other insurance companies and funding sources about possibly funding this in general?
We have not had any discussions with any outside entities about funding.
Okay.
However, the department would be open to participate in any discussions that somebody wants to have. The department does work with CMS on a regular basis and other areas, so there is a relationship with CMS, but at this time there has been no current discussions regarding home care, the Home Care Services Consumer Protection Act and funding.
Okay, great. Thanks. So where do you see the Home Care Services Bureau in 2017? You guys have how many staff now?
Oh, goodness. Let's see here. We have 16 analysts. There's 4 managers. So that's 20. Then we have 4 support staff and 2 seasonal clerks. So what does that put us at? 27, I want to say.
Okay.
27.
Do you see that increasing as you continue to bring in volume, or are you stable now because the implementation is well on its way?
Well, we're using this period to identify what resources, if additional resources are necessary.
Okay.
Again, not knowing the population size, it's difficult to say that we're going to need additional analysts, but we are monitoring it.
Okay.
And evaluating and are prepared to go in and ask for additional resources if it's deemed necessary.
Very good. And just to remind the audience, and forgive me if I'm wrong, the Home Care Services Bureau is basically self-funded in a sense by the organizations mm-hmm. and caregivers that are providing the registration fees and license mm-hmm. fees. So this is not a burden to taxpayers, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it is a self-funded program. We are very conscientious about that as well. That's as kind of Yvonne was mentioning, we are monitoring workload and monitoring activities to see if additional resources are needed.
Okay, good. Now for the general public who's looking to maybe find out online, we talked about this earlier, where they can find if a caregiver is registered or if a licensed if an organization is a licensed HCO or home care organization, where can they find that information again?
So we have 2 different websites, and I'm gonna say them out loud, and it's gonna be long, and I hope it'll be able to be understood. But we have 2. So for the organizations, we have something that is often referred to as the transparency website. It's also referred to as the Community Care Licensing Facility Search. So that you can look up any actually facility that is licensed by the Community Care Licensing Division and check on the licensing status.
Yeah.
As well as I think it shows the different complaints or visits that are associated to those facilities.
Sure.
So that web address, and again, it's going to be really long, but it's www.ccld, as in Community Care Licensing Division, .ca.gov. And then you have a /, and it's PG, as in page, 3581.htm. And again, that's a really long one, so I hope everyone understands it. I'm going to go really quickly again. It's just www.ccld.ca.gov/PG3581.htm. And that's to look up the different organizations and facilities. And then the Home Care Aide Registry is for searching the home care aides, which it's an even longer web address, but it's best to find that link on the Home Care Services Bureau website. So I'll go over that as well. But what it will show you on the Home Care Aide Registry is their status.
Okay.
It'll also show you the registration date. We have had a lot of questions about the expiration date because that does play a huge role into when they need to reapply. Unfortunately, the registry right now does not show that, but okay. You can kind of just do a quick calculation of when their expiration date is.
Makes sense.
And that website, again, here's a long one. It's www.ccld.ca.gov .gov, and then this one is a /pg3654.htm. So quickly again, it's www.ccld.ca.gov/pg3654.htm. And again, if you didn't catch that or you have any other questions, just give us a call. We'll walk you right through how to get to both those sites.
Okay, very good. And then my last question was, are agencies or organizations showing as active yet, or are they still pending?
Both, actually. We have a few agencies, about 10 or so, that we're very closely walking through the licensure process to make sure that the systems are tracking everything appropriately and then the facility search is showing them correctly. So we're closely monitoring those. So we have a few showing active right now.
Okay, great.
And then the vast majority are still showing pending. And once we just verify that everything system-wise is moving smoothly and working perfectly, we'll go ahead and license the other ones that are kind of in the queue waiting.
Very good. And just for the audience out there, the organizations that are pending, basically means they have done their part. Is that accurate?
Yeah, pretty much. They've done their part. They've submitted a full application. A lot of them, the analysts have already reviewed and approved, and they're on the manager's desk right now for final approval.
Okay.
We're really, really close. So
if I'm a consumer and I see my agency is pending, that I shouldn't worry necessarily, right? Like, that's okay.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, that's the normal right now. Okay. That's the vast majority.
And I think that's the message that I wanted to get across to you out there in the audience is, you know, this is brand new, yes, and it takes a while to activate everybody. So there are great organizations out there that might show pending, but don't worry. They've done everything on their end. And these folks up here in Sacramento are doing everything on their end to make sure all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, and good to go. So again, consumers and professionals out there, no need to worry when you see pending at this point in the process.
Correct.
Perhaps, you know, if maybe next year, that might be something you'd want to call about potentially.
Yeah.
But
and I mean, don't worry about pending, but for whatever reason, if you have questions, again, just give us a call and we can kind of walk through why people are pending. Again, it's just because they're in the application status. And I have to say that everyone has been really, with the organizations that have submitted applications, have been really working closely with their analysts and establishing that relationship and getting information in. And it's been a really good relationship. And I think that, you know, if we did this next month, it'd be different. You'd see a lot more. But we're closely watching just to make sure that everything is reflected accurately.
Okay, very good. And for those listening in, when this podcast is released, which will be a couple weeks out still, you may see more active organizations. So hopefully the organization you work with is active. But again, if not, pending is okay.
Yes.
If you have any questions, call the Bureau. Yes. So I think we've covered everything today with the update. Was there anything else, McCauley and Yvonne, that you wanted to share with the audience? Again, the audience is typically healthcare professionals and some general public as well.
I just would like to thank you again for allowing us to be here and to use this as a way to get the information out. We really appreciate being part of this, and to thank everyone who's been patient and working with us during this implementation process.
You're welcome, Yvonne. We appreciate the quarterly update from you guys and being available quarterly to give updates and any changes in the processes and things like that. McCauley, was there anything else that you wanted to share?
I think the biggest thing is congratulations on the award. I think that's huge.
Thank you.
And again, thank you for allowing us this opportunity, because it does help with our outreach and our technical assistance. And I know I feel like I keep repeating myself, but call us if you have any questions. I don't want to say that enough. That's what we're here for. This is a new program, and there's still a lot to learn.
Yeah.
So give us a call. That's what we're here for, and we'll walk through whatever questions anyone may have, general public, healthcare professionals, organizations, any of them. We'll answer the questions.
Great. Well, McCauley, Yvonne, thanks so much again for joining us today. We know your time is very valuable and busy, and as you guys run a great organization. So very much appreciate it. And we hope to have another update maybe perhaps in the next quarter or so.
Perfect.
From you guys. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Pop Health Podcast. We will be sending an announcement next week about the award process and how you can vote for Pop Health Podcast to win the award. Again, we're one of a few finalists across the country in the healthcare category for the National Podcast Awards. So again, very grateful. We are a not-for-profit. We don't take sponsors. We don't take anything like that. So just the recognition and the time that folks like McCauley and Yvonne give us is great. So stay tuned. You can also rate us, I guess, on iTunes. It's my first time mentioning this, but we would love for you guys to do that as well. Again, it helps when guests like McCall and Yvonne are invited and they see those things. It really helps with credibility to our podcast. And I think we've already established a great podcast. It's been less than a year, and we've had some great guests. So thank you, everybody, and stay tuned for our next guest. Take care.